continue with part two of our 2021 year in review, now moving on to some of the more specific flavour comparisons between sets and the look of Magic as a whole, both this year and looking just a little bit into the future.
Strixhaven versus Kaldheim.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
So the 10 versus the 5 is the way that I kind of see this. Because I've got three basic questions. I know you've already kind of spoiled the answer to this a little bit.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Which is, no, it's fine. It's okay. One, which resonated more? And then kind of a sub-theme of that is what felt more unique mechanically and thematically? Because I think those are the big comparisons, right? In terms of structure, it is essentially 10 realms which were all two colours versus 5 schools which were two colours. But did it feel like the 5 schools were missing out on the other ones? Or did it feel like the 10 were trying too hard to fit the other ones? Should they have done the opposite 5? Because I feel like now, looking at it now, I know they kind of started with the 10, then did the 5. Imagine if they did the 5 non-school colours. So I'm trying to think of literally off the top of my head.
Like Slesnia, Dimir.
Good God. Good job, buddy.
Rakdos.
Boros. No, we did Boros. God, Green. It was Green.
Simic. No, they did Simic.
God, we're so bad at this. Fuck.
They didn't do Azorius.
Do Azorius. Yeah, so they didn't do Azorius. They didn't do Rakdos. They didn't do Selesnya. They didn't do Dimir. And they didn't do... What's the other one?
Gruul.
Gruul, there we go. Good God, fantastic.
Using Ravnica terminology to do Strixhaven schools against what they didn't do.
Yeah, surprisingly, that was really difficult. It's kind of good, right? Because I feel like I didn't, even then, I wasn't thinking of the schools as their Ravnican guilds. I was thinking of them as their school names. You know, yeah. I was thinking, you know, Prismari, Quandrix, all that kind of thing. So what I think, So I kind of feel like what they should have done in Kaldheim is they should have done the 5 guilds as they were that weren't represented in Strixhaven, and then followed up in this, because then throughout the year you've had all 10 guilds as they were, all 10 two color combinations kind of fitted in. And I think that's really indicative of why Kaldheim, for me, I know I asked you a question that I'm going to answer myself, it kind of felt really it felt like it was really had no permanence to it, really forgettable. And I feel like the problem was that it was just trying to do so many things at once. And I didn't play during original Ravnica. I kind of wish I had, but they split that into across 3 sets. And as far as I'm aware, that was still a lot to take in by the end of that set block, you know? And I feel like with Kaldheim, it was almost like, can we push it to 10 realms? And they maybe just about squeaked it in terms of like, playability. I remember when it came out, like, we didn't feel like it was too overwhelming, but we definitely felt like they were pushing to maybe a little too much.
Yeah. Okay, so here's my thoughts on it. In terms of splitting it across the two planes and then doing the alternate two color pairings, I think that would have been maybe fine as a coherent thing across the year, but I think you would have got a very short changed in Kaldheim. What I think was very clever, and what we sort of forget about Kaldheim, is that it wasn't just the two color combinations, it was also tribal. Each of the two color combinations were very much tied to a tribe, right? So the Dimir were the Karnfell, I suppose, were the zombies, for example, the Starnheim were the angels, of the black white, blah, 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 blah. And I think we're too harsh on Kaldheim. I think I've seen a lot of people say that it's like their favorite set thematically, and I've seen a lot of people say that it's their favorite set visually, because it was so striking with like the Aurora Borealis, like in all the like artworks, all the snow mechanics. It was a plane that we knew Magic was going to eventually. It's a little bit like how we've been for the past 3 years going like, when are we going back to Phyrexia, man? So many times people were like,
so
when
true.
Are we going to Kaldheim? We even saw there was like a leak or a spoiler for like Magic Arena of like 2 years ago, where someone found like a banner for Kaldheim and like or something. It was something or other, and people were like, "Oh, we're going there eventually." And it's been a plane that's been mentioned time and time again. And so I think Kaldheim was a very needed set, and also it gave us things like Kaya, like got really pushed to the forefront. I know Kaya had a lot to do during War of the Spark, but it gave us kind of post-war Kaya with like, you know, all of her cool like weapons, and it gave us like Vorin Klex and there was so much going on in that set that I think people focus on the fact that there were 10 guilds, because from like maybe like a constructed or a limited environment even, it seemed like there was a lot going on. But actually, flavorfully, there was a lot going on, and maybe not all of it got its time in the sun, but it gave us so much to be getting on with. And yes, I can't name all 10 of the realms off the top of my head. I could have a good crack, but I think it would take me like a lot longer than maybe I'd care to admit. But it gave us like a pantheon of gods. It gave us like the cosmos, like beasts and monsters. And like, I think Kaldheim, if you were to look at it in a bubble, again, I think I said this, I remember saying this at the time, it's like they designed a Norse mythology inspired card game, Wizards, and then they went, should we just make this a Magic set? Because it had so much going on.
Yeah.
And I think that whereas Strixhaven kept it a much lower to the ground, both in its narrative and its design, and yes, only did 5 different color pairings, whereas Kaldheim did this massive, expansive Ragnarok like story arc with lots of different characters, and Tybalt was there. Do you remember Tybalt was the big bad?
Man, Valky, mate. Valky was one of the highlights of that set for me. That idea that he's the god of lies, and it actually ended up being a lie. He wasn't even the god of lies.
He wasn't even the god of lies.
Lying. He was lying about that.
who was the sexy elf planeswalker?
Oh, Tyvar?
We had Tyvar from there. Do you know what I mean? We had Nico Aris.
Yep, Nico Aris, absolutely.
Yeah.
Our second Therosian walker of the I guess, no, sorry, because Basri was from Amarenkhet.
Yeah, but like our first non-binary planeswalker as well.
Yes.
Like, do you know what I mean? It had so much going on that I think, unfortunately, this year, because this year has actually been quite tight thematically across different, like, of the mainline sets, I think Kaldheim, packed way too much in, but the showcase borders were rad. The gods were rad. The setting was awesome. Every individual piece about it was so good. It just, Kaldheim should have been the 2-block set.
Right, this is exactly what I was going to say. This should have been the double feature set. Because I feel like they could have done the gods and then the mortals, and they could have done that as above, so below kind of feeling. You could have done 5 and 5. And it's kind of interesting that both Strixhaven and Kaldheim both turned some color combinations on their head. Okay, yes, there were some angels in, some Orzovian angels in Ravnica, but that kind of like the judger and the savior, like the good and the bads, like that was a really cool dynamic for the Valkyries. And then also when we saw Strixhaven having all of the, you know, like word fucking magic, like they did really good job of almost like reinventing some. I mean, don't get me wrong, like the Azorius one was just spirits and the Tibet one was just zombies, so it wasn't like it wasn't groundbreaking across the board, which I think maybe had they split it into two might have even shone a brighter light on the fact that there wasn't as much innovation, as it were. Like maybe the fact they shoved it all into one kind of covered up a lot of sins that if we were to extrapolate and stretch it across two sets would have made it a bit more obvious. Who knows? I think people, after waiting, as you hit the nail on the head when you said we were waiting so long to go there, that by the time we got there, it was such a flurry of everything and it was done before we'd even realized that you're kind of like, oh, was that it? And kind of how do we even go back? Because again, if they go back, do you miss out some of the realms? Do you only do some of them?
Well, no, because they did focus on some more than others, both in the set and narratively as well. So Bretagard, Starnheim, the Knotswold, which is the troll one, those were ones that were really focused on. Oh, and oh my gosh, Imestrum, which was the
goddamn Imestrum. Would have been, do you know what I mean? So cool. See, focus on those ones. Why not?
Well, no, because they did focus on those ones in this narrative, is what I'm saying. So they obviously like traveled around those and they did all that kind of stuff. So when we go back, and also the side stories did flesh out. You had Istvel, which was the blue white one. Wow, I'm actually getting all of these.
Good job, buddy. And then Lityara was the. That's the one I really want. I think we're both going to be agreed in this. That's the one I wanted to see more of, and they didn't. I was really fucking pissed
That's
off about it.
That's the big one. That's the big one. And I did a Twitter post about this a few days ago. And now by the time this comes out, because this will probably be our second episode, actually, of this. It'll probably be weeks ago now, where I feel like the not only were the Lityara and shapeshifters, but also the the archaics of of Strixhaven,
yeah.
And also the Dawnheart Coven of Innistrad. These three, which I put them thematically all together as being like the more sort of abstract mystical factions of each.
Yeah,
of
the more
planes.
The more individualistic almost, yeah, aspects of the.
They
planes,
got
the
very that... short change this year.
Absolutely, yeah.
But what I'm saying is if we go back to Kaldheim, and there's no reason we can't. There's no reason we can't in a couple of years go back to Kaldheim. I think, so the Lit-Yarans, the Istfell, the Skuld Dwarves of that one, their plane, their realm of existence, I forget. I think they will get much more to do because they've already done other stuff. But like even just the thematic of tying Imestrum to the planar chase card Imestrum and also Warstorm Surge, which references it as well, which is like the enchantment, the magic enchantment, like tying it all together and showing that like they weren't shying away from the fact that Kaldheim wasn't always a thing and Imestrum was going to be like the Viking plane. And, you know, it shows a nice progression, whereas they've never really referenced that before, like with Baofeng or I forget what the Theros precursor was in the Planar Chase decks.
Akros.
There we go. Thank you. Well done. So I liked it. I liked it a lot. And also, it really, along with Zendikar from the year previous, it really pushed like some colours in a direction which I think was really interesting. Like the amount of cool Rakdos commanders we've got over the past couple of years is crazy.
Yeah.
And Imestrum was a big part of that. So I just feel like Kaldheim, although it was a lot, people focus on that and immediately go like, oh no, there's too much to pass. Whereas actually, if you were to break it down, There's so much goodness in that set. And visually, I mean, my God, Johannes Voss had a fucking field day. And Elena Danner.
Elena Danner, yeah, exactly what I was going to say. Yeah,
like, you look at those land cards, not even just like the fancy land cards, the basic
just the normal
lands.
Ones. Just the normal ones.
Fuck.
Yeah. I guess it's one of those things of where I agree, because the things they did give a bit of depth to, I just wanted more of. And then the things that they didn't give enough depth, there were certain things I just didn't really care for. That was like, had you removed this, we could have given more weight to these other bits. And I guess that's me just picking and choosing what my favorite bits of a set were. And it's very easy to do so with a 10 realm set. 11, if you count the snow sub theme, as it were, in terms of like thematics within the... within the set. I also really liked the double-faced gods. I liked the fact that you had their items, because it kind of reminded me of what they did in Theros originally.
Oh my God,
with the
yeah,
bow of
like...
Nylea, and then they had Nylea and they kind of had their own individual kind of, you know, interactions. Yeah, like
the flip cards where the other half is an artifact.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, what? That's crazy. That's crazy. Yeah, really, there was a whole discourse about the fact that you could have a sword as your commander. Like, my God. Like,
I guess
yeah,
we didn't even talk about this was the year of MDFCs, wasn't it? We haven't even really talked about that.
Oh, well, yeah. Like, really pushing about it. Well, that's, again, that's a mechanical theme that was across the whole...
The whole year.
The whole year.
And it didn't ever stop being confusing at every single venture, every single junction. It was more and more confusing. Again, and they both had their own individual ones, right? Because you had the items versus the people, and then you had the spells. I mean, I guess it was spell on one side, and then it could be anything on the other, right? In Strixhaven, didn't just
well, also they had they had all the deans.
Yeah, doubled up creatures. Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah. Oh, man. This year has just been.
It's been amazing.
So let's just focus. I guess we might as well, because we're gonna do set by set. We should also then now talk a little bit narratively about Kaldheim as well, because it was the kickoff of the Phyrexian kind of reintroduction, but then also didn't hear anything about it narratively properly since. But I thought in general, I liked the. I do wish I did. Right. So this is another thing I thought kind of fell flat with Kaldheim compared to how sets usually get time to breathe, having multiple sets within a block, is the story also felt quite superfluous. Not like it was trying to do a lot, but it also felt like it was another thing of where they drove by a few different planes. They didn't quite have enough time to sit on any of them. Tybalt just kind of gave all of his plan off in one story and then off fucked and we don't see him again. And then there's kind of a little bit of interaction with Tyvar and Kaya, good God, it's all the Y sounds. Kaya and Tyvar going to
Tyre, Kaikar and Tyvar and
Tovalar. Yeah, it's fucking Tovalar. Jesus Christ. It's just ridiculous. And they're all going to the big battle, right? The Doomscar battle, which is a big Battle of the Five Armies, but it's the Ten Realms, whatever, kind of, you know, it felt like the end of The Hobbit, kind of a little bit, yeah, sure, whatever, there's demons and angels. And
it was
fighting.
Cool that they had, I actually forget his name because so it's such a hated card nowadays.
Varagoth?
No, what's the Cosmos Serpent?
Oh, Koma, yeah.
Yeah. I did find it very cool that Koma kind of, like, sort of showed up. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was
the way that
we knew they were going to show up, and then the way that they did, I thought was very cool. Again, it was very blow by blow, but you had to get through all the different things. But again, we had the side stories, which were really, really good. And Kaya is just, I mean, this is the year of Kaya as well. This is where they've really pushed Kaya to the front. And we've said it every single time, and I've said it as recently as Innistrad. Kaya's fucking cool. And Kaldheim really showed that off. Kaya was hunting a Phyrexian Praetor and winning.
Yeah, I know. But that's the thing, right? So story relevance to the rest of the arc and the fallout from War of the Spark, close to zero.
Yeah.
Each story getting me, like that first story had me hooked as Kaya was in the back of Vorin Kleks's pelt. Holy shit. Yeah. So cool. And this idea that, I mean, this is it. Like, the bookends to the story, I think, were really, really, really impressive. This introduction of Phyrexians and this kind of alien quality. Everyone knows this thing isn't from this plane. And even again, that first episode, Alrond, I think, drops in, right? And starts talking to Kaya. And she's just like, I don't give a shit that you're a god. Look at the fucking mess I've got to deal with right now. Do you want me to help you or not? And Alrond's kind of like, okay, here's a boat that knows where it's going. Enjoy, you know. Actually, that's very similar to Theros, but, you know, with their boat that knew where it was going as well.
Well, do you know,
that's
this, narratively, analogs, this is also a year as well where they've started dropping in the idea that a lot of other planes are, like, more aware of the multiverse than, say, classically they have been in the past, and I kind of prefer it.
God.
Again, it's that dramatic irony thing. Yeah, it's that dramatic irony thing of we know there's a multiverse, and it's a bit boring for every time a planeswalker goes to a new plane and they're like, oh, you're wearing strange clothes. It's like, yeah, okay, fucking whatever.
Yeah, does it really matter?
Just, like, accept it. It's fine.
Exactly. So yeah, I think there's a lot of aspects that kind of made Kaldheim kind of feel separate or disparate, as it were, because Kaya doesn't even, like, talk about Phyrex. It's like, at no point does she mention Vorin Kleks to Teferi. That could have been a conversation, right, that easily could have happened in Crimson Vow or Midnight Hunt that never got brought up, which is interesting, because right at the end, he's like, oh, don't forget about these Phyrexians. At that point, Kaya could go, shit, they were on Kaldheim. I guess maybe his explanation might not have been synonymous in her mind with Vorin Kleks. It might not have seemed like it was the same thing. And also, now the Phyrexians have the God Elixir. Whether that's going to trump the Moonsilver Key or not, I guess, who knows? I guess I like how both sides are kind of pulling together MacGuffins. Like,
they dropped in Tezzeret. They dropped in Tezzeret.
Right? I know. It's everything about it is just so, oh, forget about this until later. And they do a really good job of it.
I can't believe the restraint they've had over the year to have their first set of stories being like, oh, by the way, Tezzeret's creating like a dark gatewatch with like the Praetors or like whatever the hell it's going to turn out to be. And then they don't reference it until the last line of the last Crimson Vow story where Teferi goes, oh yeah, by the way, Phyrexians, yeah. Like, they had a whole year.
Can you lean in so I can do that again, please? That was sensual. That was amazing.
Watch out for those Phyrexians.
Oh, you dirty bastard.
But, like, the restraint I thought was really cool. No, well, I think, so this is going to be a cool one. That, how does, mentioning about how, like, oh, why didn't Kaya mention to Teferi about the Phyrexians? Not everyone knows about the Phyrexians. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Kaya doesn't know what they are, really, does she?
No, I don't think she has any under, because we didn't obviously it was Essica who dealt with Vorin Kleks at the end, right?
Oh my god, so cool.
That was the coolest ending to a story arc I think I've ever read. It was so, like, oh, it was like a horror film. It was fantastic. It was way more horror than Innistrad was, that's for sure. She considers it to be game to hunt, and obviously she clearly understands it can travel between. She doesn't know it can travel between planes, but she knows it can travel between realms, which is interesting enough. But considering she was also dealing with Tybalt, a sword that could cut through realms, a Koma giant fucking serpent thing that's coming through the realm. I think Kai was dealing with enough that I've reckoned she's like, everyone's like, oh, so how was your counter? We don't talk about it. It's fine. It was cool. It was a fun couple of weeks. There's this elf dude who's quite sexy. Other than that, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like it was deliberately yada yada yada. And I do agree that we can come back to it again. I just think that it did feel like when you had Innistrad and Midnight Hunt at the end of the year, kind of demonstrating how you can split a set into two and do almost like, as it's without the double feature aspect, a double feature set. Maybe Kaldheim could have benefited from that as well. But again, everything's 2020 hindsight, right? And I do agree there were so many good things in the set, so many good cards, so many cool mechanics, so many Fortell, I think, is genius.
Oh, for example, excellent.
You know?
So there we go. We've spoken now for like 20 minutes about Kaldheim, and the only bad thing we can say about it is it was a little bit stuffed.
Yeah,
but everything in it was great.
Stop putting so many good things in your magic sets, wizards.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
there we go.
Yeah, really good, really good. So then comparing that, I guess, is comparing chalk to cheese. I only said it because it was like the 10 versus the 5, and whether or not that benefits or doesn't benefit. But I feel both Strixhaven and Kaldheim were very, very good representations of new sets. I mean, Kaldheim, we'd already seen years before, right? It was kind of an expectation going into it, where we knew eventually we were going to get to it. Whereas I don't think there's any other sets that were kind of like, when do we finally... I mean, apart from A Western World, which people have been asking for ages, there's no other set, I think, that came out through Plane Chase that people are like, when are we going to go there?
When are we going to go to university?
You know, like, it's right? Like, it's not like an Equinor kind of thing where it's a really interesting idea, but probably won't make a plane, and it's none of the other ones which kind of like, okay, cool, it's a hippodrome. Fantastic. So yeah, like Strixhaven. I agree. I think this is one of the most succinct, well-presented, maybe its representation was iffy at points, but I feel like for what it was trying to deliver and how it achieved it, I think Strixhaven is an absolute home run. I don't know how they could have fit more into Kaldheim because it already felt too full. I don't know how they could have fit more into Strixhaven because it didn't even quite feel too full.
No, it was really tight. It was really tight. Keeping it to five schools, keeping the storyline relatively insular, keeping all the mechanics familiar yet changing them up. Like, they didn't try to build a whole new wheel. Do you know what I mean? They reinvented it. And I know that the saying is you can't reinvent the wheel, but it's like they didn't try to do something completely busted or weird and magic. They took things that people already liked and they were like, how can we tweak this flavorfully? How can we make it like thematically feel new whilst keeping elements of it that people liked? Like, it's still +11 counters, graveyard mechanics, pingers, like spell slinger artifacts, and then I don't know whatever the hell like black white was doing. I guess +11 counters as well. Like, it was still very recognizable things. They weren't building whole new mechanics for it, but you know, in terms of like, you know, they weren't like, Lessons was the big one, and Lessons was probably the biggest flop of all of them, but simply because it didn't translate to a lot of formats that people play.
True.
That's the only thing I can think of in that set that didn't like work like full steam, but everything about it was awesome. The narrative, as much as the battle with the mage hunters, was maybe a bit of a letdown.
Do we ever care about the battles, Andy?
But really? No, not really. But like, having Professor Onyx, having the development of the twins, even though they're both fairly unlikable at this point, it was nice to see them back again.
So true. Like, oh my god.
Having
so
Luca
true.
In the background, like having like the Aurik, like something that if we go back to Arcavios, the Aurik would be cool. The Blood Age.
That Blood Age,
history,
right?
Like,
they need to start doing back in the day sets, right? I feel like this is true for so many sets of where we want to see like this is cool now. But let's see how it got here, because there's all this cool history. Like,
well, next year, Nathan, what are they doing?
That's true. Yeah,
they're doing the Brothers War.
They should do Brothers War. Yeah, so I'd like to see this in other sets. Like, I'd like to see Ravnica before the Guild Pact. You know, like, I'd like to see... I can't think of another example off the top of my head. But yeah, Blood Age is a really good example of this. Of like, throw us back to before everything was... Because I guess, how much of the plane have we seen as well, right? It's a really small amount, right? We've just seen, like, that essentially the central hub. And then there's like
the central hub of the northern continent, of which there are two on Arcavios. Do you know what I mean?
So it's a whole other thing, kind of like Ixalan, of where we haven't seen Torizon. No, we have seen Torizon.
There was the three-part Vivian Reed story, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, again, it's one of these things of where you have a lovely, tight, scenic, almost like a scene from the plane, but the plane itself, as you say, with all of the archaics and stuff, is much, much more vastly interesting. Kasmina, one of the more interesting planeswalkers, we have not much more elucidation on her character or her arc or her intentions. This is very much a place that you could go back and be like, cool, you've seen the college, now go and see the rest of the country kind of thing. And agreed, they did this thing of where they reinvented all of the different enough, at least they tweaked guilds into schools to kind of show you that two color combinations don't have to feel generic. I play a white red reanimator. It's the first time, Andy, that I've been this is the year for me where I broke my a commander deck for each color combination and no more than one. Because I just simply couldn't keep repurposing. Because what I'd do is I'd have, like, you know, the blue-green counters deck, right? And I'd just repurpose it each time new cards came out or each time we went back to Ravnica or something. I'd be like, okay, another version, new Simic cards to go in there. Whereas with, say, the Silver Quill deck, I was like, this is so different from my AD deck. I can't not just have another separate combat politic
well
deck.
Sure, I mean, like, the Strixhaven is the set that got me to play a red blue Spellslinger deck, and although red blue is the classic Spellslinger colors, the way that it's done it in having it feel like you're not just racing towards one combo or whatever, the way that Zavai feels, or if you're playing Zavai, if you're playing Veyran, or if you're playing, I think Veyran's the name, or
Veyran, yeah, it's
either Veyran, or if you're playing
Lieutenant or whatever you want to call it,
yeah, or if you're playing like Uvilda and Nefari, which was the flip team, which, by the way, I still maintain the Jason Rainville art for those two deans is the best art of the year, full stop. Still maintain it, fight me.
I should have had a best artwork, really, shouldn't have.
Well, I mean, how can you? It's also amazing. That's my favorite. I don't necessarily think it's the best. I think that's my favorite. It was the one that made me, like, I was shocked. That, along with the I criminally forget the artist and indeed the card, but the card which is shows the main orc character from Strixhaven doing the paint magic.
Right. Yes. Yes. It's got a completely almost different art style for the bit of art that she's doing. Yeah.
Yeah. That, again, I said at the time, that made me stand up out of my sofa when I saw that on the on the reveal on Twitch. I literally stood up out of my seat. I was like, "What is that?" Anyway, my point being is that the Prismari sort of, like, very improvisational, it felt like you were, like, jazzing around and, like, playing a bit of music, and, like, there are so many different things that can happen, and you're not just racing towards, like, a storm combo out. Do you know what I mean? Like, you can do, but, like, if you're building, like, a just kind of, you can build Spellslinger where it's almost like everything's a little bit disparate, but because everything kind of bounces off each other, like, it feels like you're, like, anything could happen, you know? And that made me excited to play Spellslinger, as opposed to going, well, I'm going to combo out, I'm going to draw my deck and Labman. Like, you know, okay. Like, you don't do that with Prismari, or at least you don't have to.
No, it's about going bombastic. It's about doing silly things outside of normal Storm, right? Like, it's not like my Kakar deck where I'm like, okay, Underworld Breach, all right, Jeskha's Will, guess we're just doing the same thing. No, it feels like you're doing silly, nonsensey kind of things. It feels like Thousand Year Storm, but without the easy mode, which I think is really, really cool. I think
variants. It feels like EDH Spellslinger. It finally feels like Spellslinger and EDH. That's not just combo out win.
Yeah,
like there are no infinite combos in my Zavai deck. And actually, I play very little actual Storm in there. There are a couple of Storm cards, but I'm my Zavai deck, and indeed I think a lot of people's, because they're trying to hit that 10 on his ability, where it's like you hit the 10. Obviously, like, this is from the Commander deck, right? This isn't from the main set proper, but if we're talking about it thematically, the Strixhaven Commander decks were tied into what you're doing from the main set as well. Like, it's about hitting those big spells and having just things like ping off each other and just, you know, have this big, like, huge turn where, like, you kind of, your symphony, like, erupts and you feel like you are, like, the Thunder Conductor, you know? Or, like, you feel like you're doing your big performance. It feels Spellslinger, but it's very performative, you know? And I think they did such a good job. I mean, they turned green-black into the pingers.
It's amazing, right? Like, and I think apart from a Quandrix, I feel like all of the others, and even Quandrix to a degree, I feel like they just kind of, they tried to go number specific, and that's kind of hard to do and nail down. I feel like all of the other four schools did such a good job of reinventing the wheel. You know, Boros can have value. It can do things like Reconstruct History, for example, is one of the best value cards released this year, I think, in terms of just, like, generic value. And it's, you know, it's a four mana Boros card. You know, they did it in general. I feel like the diversity that they managed to achieve with Strixhaven, whilst also nailing almost a cliche of thematics, was such a beautiful complementation, because it was something new whilst also being very, very familiar, and that kind of hit nostalgia whilst also being new and exciting. And it was everything. The fact, as you say, it avoided being a Harry Potter set, but still rode that kind of... There's a reason Harry Potter was so popular, right? I don't know what it did specifically, but it was almost cute ethereal, magic-y kind of stuff. It wasn't too like, oh, you have to be a nerd to really enjoy it, like something like Lord of the Rings or something like that, where you kind of have to be really invested. It's not like this really ungrokkable world. It's very easily relatable to, and I feel like that's what Strixhaven was supposed to be. It was this very easily relatable world amongst all this other high fantasy planes that are kind of going, well, how do I relate to a mafia demon boss? I can't really. But how do I relate to being cussed out at school? Absolutely.
Yeah. You know? And it was, I think so that's probably the biggest, then, I think Strixhaven, as much as I still maintain it's the best set in the year, it did have some of the biggest controversy with the themes of magic that were coming out. So you can't avoid the fact that the black-white school of...
Silverquill.
Oh my gosh, sorry. I've got all the Kaldheim.
There's so many words in my head.
You can't
right
avoid
now.
The fact that there were some cards in the Silverquill that were maybe a bit mean-spirited for magic. Yeah. And I think, although at the time it seemed a lot bigger, I think obviously hindsight, like, you know, there are other things going on in magic that are maybe a bit more important. But a lot of the cards which kind of showed, you know, people being actively bullied or being like punished in a way at a school which you wouldn't necessarily think is appropriate. I think it's funny, isn't it, how Strixhaven was so relatable, but it was almost too relatable. Like, it couldn't actually provide, in some individual aspects, an escape from people's actual lives. And indeed, that was the biggest thing with, like, some of the characters and their Asian representation. A lot of the people felt that the kind of stereotypes, if that's the word we're going to use about it, were almost too... sort of like grounded in like actual trauma that people have had in their lives, like having like the quote-unquote tiger parents. People were like, you know, there are other stories that we can tell in our fantasy settings. We don't necessarily need to rely on these things. We need to move past them. And, you know, that was, I'm not going to get into the whole debate now, but it's interesting actually looking at it from maybe like a bit of distance now at the end of the year, that all that conversation was able to be had in a magic set set in a university, not even like a battlefield or a war ground, like a war zone, sorry, like set in a school. And those are the kind of conversations that we can have about the game. It's quite incredible, really.
Yeah. I think it's also, again, we mentioned it before, but narratively didn't have to introduce any new characters to make the setting feel new and exciting. I mean, yeah, there was Extus, who couldn't possibly be more of a Saturday TV show villain if he tried.
Oh,
literally getting crushed by his own fucking monster at the end. It's just genius. It's so typical. But again, it gave us a perfect, this is when I said earlier that there was no fallout from war in from War of the Spark in Kaldheim. Like, there was absolutely fallout from War of the Spark in this set. Like, we got to see Professor Onyx, the first time we've seen a Monica really drastically undermine a character that we've seen before, and give her closure, as it were. Like, it was amazing. I think one of the best interactions was her kind of conversation with Witherbloom. Can't remember her first name now.
Bellatrix
Witherspoon, yeah. Also very, very close to Bellatrix, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, I said it the other day, I think in a couple of episodes ago I mentioned it. Yeah, that I don't think even that was a whole episode unto itself, was it? A story episode?
No,
I think that
it was just a little excerpt.
It was an excerpt of it. And yeah, that is some of the best interaction we've had narratively. Mm. And it was just about the nature of a character that we know a lot about, but in fact don't know much about their past except for their literal origin. Like, there's a huge gaps in Liliana's life. And this just filled in a little bit and gave us so much more to a character that I think everyone, as much as they love them, everyone's a little bit sick of the Gatewatch, and yet this felt so fresh and new for it. Like, in ways that, unfortunately, Jason, Chandra, and Nyssa don't.
Some people are one-beat notes, right? Gideon, they pushed him as far as they could, going, okay, we've basically written him to a corner, let's kill him off. But let's kill him off in a way that has fallout for another character. You know, like, Jace is only so many times a guy can lose his memory and then have it lost again before you get sick and tired of it, until like, oh, okay, now he's established a relationship with Vraska, suddenly he's interesting. Chandra, there's only so many times you can have someone set fire to something as a moody little madam until you give her an interesting relationship and then ruin it and taking it away, and then again maybe build it back in again. The most interesting part of Chandra's character this last year has been her interaction with Adeline, because it's kind of proven that they're willing to go back on the retconning of her and Nyssa's relationship. Liliana might be the most narratively diverse character we've seen. Sorin's coming up close. I don't think it's just because they're both black characters. I think it's because they're both very, very old, and we get to kind of see the ramifications of their actions. Yeah. We get to see them deal with the issues of living for a long time and having to live through your mistakes and make mistakes and having to bargain with demons and how do you get out of the back. You know, like, they've got a lot of narrative chops. And as you say, there are still massive holes in their stories that can fill in even more backstory, even more breadth to their character. So I think there's a reason why they leaned into it, and it was still absolutely fine for us to have that one last little sing of Gideon, just to kind of push Liliana's character kind of to a natural conclusion or into a new character arc, right? I mean, again, I wouldn't be sad if we never saw her again, but I also think it's a very good opportunity for her to have a different trajectory now. Yes. Same with kind of the twins. The twins, I'm still very unsure of. I think that they've had a lot of confusion between authors. I feel like they need their good author, right? I don't think Wilder Quest was a bad story at all, but we didn't get much in Battle Bond, and then we didn't get much coming into Strixhaven. Their interaction with Garrick left a lot to be desired. Their interaction with each other, as you say, made them come across as quite churlish. Like
they weren't the most likable. Like, as like we said in our story view at the time, like, Rowan needs to chill out and like actually see the bigger picture, whereas sorry about that. someone's taking stuff a little out of a freezer. And then Will just needs to like let Rowan do their thing, like
just live in the moment a little bit as well. Balance each other, don't be opposites of a magnet, like complement, find a middle ground. I'm not saying like fuse yourselves together into one like coherent human being, but that should be their dynamic. They shouldn't be extremes that are constantly at odds with each other. They should be a complementation. They should be complement each other. I guess that's kind of what the story was trying to get at. I just don't feel like it delivered it well enough at the end. But I do feel like maybe they can, because I mean, what, Rowan had her fucking Wanda Maximoff moment, right? Where she turned to the Scarlet Witch and I can channel the cosmos, you know, kind of moment, which is fine.
Oh,
and
sure.
I guess.
I mean, I was thinking, I thought of it more like Jean Grey as Phoenix, but yeah, sure.
True, I guess the analogs are very similar for both, right? And I guess, yeah, maybe we'll see as they go forward. Again, Luca was another really good example of seeing, I think he was a highlight, I think, for the story for me. I mean, Liliana's right close behind him, but I really like non-sympathetic characters. And I think I said this during the story episode as well, of like, I like Luca way more than I should, just because I kind of want to see what they do with this character, because either they're building him up for a massive fall, like he's going to fuck up massively, and whoever it was that was influencing him through the Ozolith, be it Oka or whatever, will have a big fallout later. Or it's just interesting to see someone who isn't, you know, completely good or completely bad. Like, it's good to see someone who has almost this kind of grayscale aspect to them, because you don't really normally get that. You get Tybalt in Kaldheim, who's, I am the Exodus of this block, foil me if you can, mortals. Or you get, you know, the truly brilliant and bold kind of Tyvar and Kyra just going around slapping everything about as heroes do. So it's quite nice to see that come as almost middle grounds, because I don't feel like we got that as much in Midnight Hunt and Crimson Vow either. I feel like it was more a way to kind of reinvent Arlin and Sorin in characters that are actually really relatable to.
Mm.
Whereas I feel like Strixhaven did a really good job of closing off a lot of stories. We don't necessarily need to see any of these characters again for a long time, but all of them also have an opportunity to do something maybe potentially interesting.
So, yeah, for sure. Yeah. I think the narrative this year has been really, really good. And I'll be interested to see what it goes on until next year. Yeah. I was talking, either in the last episode, as it is how we're splitting up, or beginning of this one, I forget, because we're all recording this in one go, how I sort of feel like actually they stitched together this year quite nicely, because this year had the theme of, you know, the softer vocations for like the characters, as I think I mentioned previously, and everything felt just a lot more low to the ground in terms of what they were trying to achieve with magic and trying to give everything an aesthetic of relatability. And I wonder if there is an idea that they do want to start stitching themes across sets a lot more now, because I want to kind of, if you're happy to do so, I want to have just a little look at next year and sort of see.
I was gonna do, yeah. I was gonna have one question of, could you tell? Because I was gonna say, with the Strixhaven coming out, that was the rotation of the block of the standard block. And can you tell me off the top of your head the sets from last year?
Eldraine.
Yep.
Zendikar.
Yep.
Sets from last year. Eldraine. Zendikar.
We've already talked about one of them this episode already, and we've forgotten it.
What, in that standard set?
Yeah.
Oh, Kaldheim, then.
No, Ikoria.
Oh, Ikoria. Was that still in there?
Yeah, and there's one, and that was last, and then we still had Core 2021, which was the Teferi Master of Time 4 Artworks one, and then there's the big, big glaring hole, which narratively makes sense, right? Because it didn't have a narrative, didn't have a story to go along with it.
Theros.
Yeah, exactly, right? Yeah. So it's funny that I think a year on, we won't have that same difficulty looking at this year.
No, I don't think so either.
That's what I think is the difference. I think last year, I think it was the beginning of let's try everything all at once kind of thing. And they didn't quite know how to hit the pace on it. This year, they hit like full throttle. And then maybe next year, they dial it back a little bit and settle somewhere in the middle where they have everything has gravity, but it doesn't feel so overwhelming. But yeah, let's have a look ahead to next year.
Next year, we've got Kamigawa, Neon Dynasty. We've got New Capenna. And then we have Dominaria United and the Brothers War, right? So those are our four big marquee
sets. In that
sets.
Order, which is still very bizarre to me.
Yes, a little bit bizarre. But so here's the thing. We're just getting a little bit of the art and stuff for Kamigawa and Neon Dynasty. And indeed, again, as I said in the last episode, the literal like MTG reveal of some of these cards is going to be happening our time in the UK in several hours. So we'll record and done this episode like by the time that comes out. So you will know in the future more than we do now. I mean, when is that ever not the case? But a lot of people are kind of either excited or a bit itchy about the fact that some of these sets are just basically going to just be, it's all going to be like, you know, motorbikes and swords and guns and things like this. And people are saying, like, Neon Dynasty, for example, is, like, the one that's in the forefront of people's minds, that it's not going to look like Magic. It's just going to look like another card game. It's going to be a bit weird. This is always the thing. But here's the thing with that, is that I think next year is the year that Magic is just a magical mech game. Because if you look at the themes of Kamigawa, Neon Dynasty, New Capenna, and the two Dominaria sets, each one of those are set on planes that either have very strong ties to 20th century aesthetic, i.e. New Capenna is 1910s, 1920s gangsters, right? So that's going to have, you know, very strong ties to 20th century aesthetics, things like cars and weapons.
Tommy guns. Yeah,
exactly. Things like that. Neon Dynasty is obviously like cyberpunk futurism and, you know... I wonder how far they're going to push that, but that's obviously going to be its own thing. And then Dominaria is famously the example of when people go, Magic has always had technology in it, right? And this is, maybe I'm sort of trying to pick up on an argument which people aren't really having anymore, but I just sort of feel like next year, the look of the game is actually going to be surprisingly coherent between sets because there is just going to be a lot more sort of like...
stuff.
Yeah, there's just going to be a lot more technology. Infinity. Yep.
You've also, I mean, if you think about like the Thran were the most scientifically advanced race that we know of within Magic, kind of ish. Like if you don't look at, say, like Kaladesh and places like that, which are essentially, you know, Industrial Revolution sets, like the Thran were scientifically advanced beyond years, and they existed, you know, 7,000 years ago in the past or whatever. So it's not as if Magic's foundation isn't based on a technological kind of like. Almost like Dominaria is like a technological wasteland, as it were. Like, yes, okay, yeah. The magic there is quite prevalent, but if anything, it's muted compared to what it used to be because, you know, as we talked about in the Trons Lands episode on YouTube, like, there were whole continents drained of their magic. So, yes, it has always been present. And I feel like, if anything, sets like Lorwyn and Eldraine and things like that tend not to, I don't want to say the word resonate because I think that's the wrong word, but I feel like they don't have as much necessarily as impacts because... people kind of like the sci-fi aspect. And just because magic is magic and has the word magic in it doesn't mean you can't have science fiction within your fantasy. You can fuse the two together quite nicely. And I think, if anything, it's where they went Kamigawa, which is one of the more traditional styled planes. And yes, as blocks go, it wasn't harkened very, very well and people didn't like it that much. But in the grand scheme of things within the set itself, it was actually really, it's really enjoyable. It's a really enjoyable set in isolation. It just didn't play well in the grand scheme of things. Power level, it was really, really all over the place and parasitic mechanics, blah, 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 blah. You know, like every set that has that kind of isn't treated very fondly. It's interesting that that's the one they decided to throw into the future and have this kind of like techno kind of aspect to. And yeah, again, New Capenna, like let's take the Angels and Demons and put them in a kind of semi Art Deco world, which again feels very modern. I'm really excited for it. I think even Brothers War is throwing us back to time before, which you'd expect everything to be less technologically advanced, and it's going to be the most technologically advanced.
Yeah, 100%. Well, this is what I think. I mentioned it in the last episode, how we're splitting these up. I have to keep saying that when we're talking about the Warhammer 40k Commander decks, where it's all going to be Space Marines, and people are worried about like Sorry, if you can hear a noise above me, by the way, there's literally a helicopter just doing circles, just literally above my flat. It's very, very inconvenient. So the Warhammer 40K universe is a universe where technology and magic and kind of sort of abstract energies all collide. And so I think actually it's going to be very sort of relevant to what's going on the rest of the sets. What they need to do is they need to make sure that the narrative is super solid, because I've already seen people on things like Twitter and social media and stuff that maybe like haven't been playing Magic as far back as Kamigawa and also don't like keep up with the lore and all this kind of stuff, who have been, you know, asking questions like, oh, this is interesting, I assumed that Kamigawa was set like so in there they're equating the idea that Kamigawa is 1,000 years, Neon Dynasty is 1,000 years difference from original Kamigawa, but in a lot of people's minds original Kamigawa is like modern day Magic, so this is like literally set in the future, and is therefore really a bit weird that they're doing that, whereas actually original Kamigawa is set 1,000 years in the past
exactly.
This is actually modern day Magic, which for some reason in my head makes it more palatable as like well, this is just what Magic is, like why wouldn't it be? You had Kaladesh, for example, that's a technologically advanced magical plane, you know. So I think they just need to really make sure that the narrative really is solid, because then people will just go, oh, okay, yeah, that makes sense within the world of Magic as we know it now. Whereas if they try and basically just, I don't know, if they either do a Theros where they don't have any narrative, or they do a narrative where they just kind of go, ah, we're just going to tell a cyberpunk sci-fi story, I think maybe it'll fall a little bit flat. Whereas the other sets, I don't think have that worry. New Capenna, I think, they're dealing with angels and demons, that's already just going to feel like Magic, just with fancy suits. Do you know what I mean? And the fact that they're bringing back Obnixilus for that set as well. So yeah. I think Neon Dynasty has work to do, and I think it's going to have to prove itself, but I'm excited for it. I'm excited to have a year of Magic that doesn't look like Magic, not because of showcase foils, but doesn't look like Magic as we've known it, because thematically they're doing moving forward. They're doing new things. I'm looking forward.
I think this is the biggest takeaway, is that now we're kind of hitting this the Phyrexians and the next arc. The last time they did this, it had this sci-fi kind of clash with the Undominaria, right? Of the Phyrexians almost felt like the Borg kind of coming down to Dune planet. That's kind of how I kind of think about it sometimes. And if they're going to introduce the Phyrexians again, they kind of need to go balls deep on it. They've kind of already set the groundwork for like seeing whether players are willing to try new things and go in new directions. And it does, let me think about it, Kaldheim, fantasy low to the ground. Strixhaven, still fantasy low to the ground. Innistrad is one of the most like typical fantasy settings in terms of planes. Yeah, this all does feel like it was just groundwork for going, okay, let's go balls to the walls for a year because the Phyrexians are coming, you know? And then let's keep it also still close to people's minds and not too diverse by going back to Dominaria for two sets, not only back to the plane and seeing how it's doing now, but also going back to the plane in back in the day, like you remember seeing in all those old cards, right? So if anything, I feel like they're going to throw everything up in the air with Capenna and Kamigawa, and then they're going to bring it back down with Dominaria before the Phyrexians kind of come in and kind of give us that big sweeping arc in 2023. I'd be interesting to see what the individual stories are for Dynasty and for Capenna. I'd be surprised if Dynasty doesn't have another first set of the year, let's remind you that the Phyrexians are still here kind of thing. Like, maybe we'll get another card. Again, we didn't expect Gintataxius. We expected Gintataxius in Strixhaven. Maybe in a Neon Dynasty where everything's super technologically advanced, makes sense, right, for the Phyrexians to have some influence, or maybe be the influence. Who knows? I feel like Capenna might do the same thing that Kaldheim did, of where it'll have some story relevance, but it will still sit somewhat in isolation. But again, if we're talking about the place Elspeth used to come from, Elspeth also has interactions with the Phyrexians. That kind of all ties in. We're kind of getting back to this point of where all of the narratives all kind of feed back in together again, and we kind of had a bit of time away from that with since War of the Spark, which kind of felt nice, right? Not everything had this giant weight and you had to know all of the years of lore for it to be relevant. It feels like we're kind of going back into a big arc again, and it's kind of exciting.
Yeah, we have seen that the bundle box for Kamigawa has the Wanderer.
Oh, is she the Emperor? Is she not? Who knows?
Maybe also, the reason she can't hold. How did we not see that the Wanderer was from Kamigawa? Well, I didn't ever make that connection, did you?
Well, because we didn't want to just assume... One, we weren't ever going back to Kamigawa, right? So it was like, you can't be from Kamigawa. It was probably going to be another Asian spy plane. Two, you don't want to just equate anything that looks slightly Asian to being like, it's from Kamigawa. And also,
we were being progressive. Okay, that's
Sure, yeah, exactly. More than Wizards usually is, which is what probably our letdown. We probably should have realised that we're just going to go with the typical trope.
Well, I think because the design of the Wanderer was specifically to be a little bit samurai, a little bit gunslinger, I think actually people were wondering whether the Wanderer was maybe from the Cowboys plane. Do you know what I mean?
Yes,
that
yes,
was
no,
a theory
absolutely.
That they were.
That was the other
like,
one.
That was.
God, could you imagine Wanderer gunslinger? That'd be so sick.
I think they still will. I think they still will.
I think the idea for her is that because she can't hold herself, maybe she's the manifestation of some of the spirits. There's the spirits of. Oh man, you're asking lore from Kamigawa times, but there's this character within who kind of lives within and without the plane. So maybe they're manifested as a planeswalker, and that's the Wanderer. Again, we're back in speculation territory again, which is my favorite territory. But I do love the fact that we're getting a bit of Wanderer. Flesh out these characters. Don't answer the questions. Like, I didn't find out much more about Kasmina, which keeps her interesting. Don't give me all of the fucking answers, Wizards. But give me a little bit more.
Oh, do you know that Tyler Jacobson artwork for that Kasmina card? God, that was lush.
I know. Don't.
Well, okay. I think we can wrap it up there then, because I think, now we're just looking into 2022, and I'm sure we'll be doing much, much more of that. Guys, thank you so much for listening to our year in review of 2021, parts one and two. Let us know what your favorite parts of 2021 were. Let us know what things you thought fell flat. If anything that we've said over these past two episodes you disagree with, or if anything that you do agree with, or is there anything massive that you think we've missed and you're like, how did you not talk about this from a flavor perspective?
How was there possibly more?
How was there possibly more? I mean, we didn't obviously talk about all the individual secret layers because, I mean, even when we do episodes on those, I'm already lost. Yeah, exactly. There was a lot of them. Fine, fair enough. But yeah, hit us up on our Twitter at MTFlavoring. My personal Twitter is at AndyManface. Nathan's, yours is?
At the Fox in the Moon.
Emails go to MTFlavoring@gmail.com. I don't really have any final thoughts. It's been a big old year for Magic, and there's been a lot in personal lives going on that has meant that I haven't played anywhere near as much as I thought I would. But I still have some Commander decks that have never seen an LGS table. Do you know what I mean? There are some that have only ever been on a webcam. That's kind of interesting. But yeah.
Gosh. Yeah, a lot to digest. Really happy in the end of it. I think we went into this year going like, oh God, how are they going to fit it all in? I kind of look, and now having had this year, look at next year, and instead of being like, holy shit, I'm like, okay. Yeah, okay, I'm ready. Hit me, Wizards.
Exactly.
Let's go again. Indeed.
Well, all that remains for me to say then is thank you so much for listening. This has been Magic the Flavouring.
We'll see you soon.